Welcome to another episode of the CC Podcast Conversations, where inspiring Christians share their faith-filled stories. Please take a moment to subscribe to this podcast, leave a five-star rating, and write a review. This helps push our content to a broader audience. Are you new to listening? Check out our other podcasts. First, the CC Podcast Daily Dose Devotions, where we're walking through the Bible, focusing on short clips of Scripture. Second is the CC Broadcast, where our weekly radio programming is archived. These podcasts are available wherever you're listening or at ChristianCrusaders.org. Okay, let's get started with today's episode. Here's our host, Matt Reister, the Executive Director of Christian Crusaders.
Hey everybody, Matt Reister here with the CC Podcast Conversations, and we got another interview today. It's with retired pastor, Tory Robinson. And Andrew, you have listened to these interviews.
Yeah.
I obviously just did them this past weekend at the Federated Fellowship Bible Conference in Pella, Iowa, but what'd you think?
Yeah, great. It still is still weird to me that Pastor Tory is retired. Like you kind of think okay, you know, who his dad was and all of that. And, you know, the fact that all that material is still so widely available and easily available. And so to think Dr. Haddon's kid is retired.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, totally. I don't remember if we talked about this in the interview, but one thing he said about, you know, being retired, he's used to preaching every Sunday.
Yeah.
But now he's not preaching that much. So it's kind of nice to have an outlet like this Bible conference.
Yeah.
He's teaching some classes at their church, which sounded cool.
Yep.
I got connected with Tory at the Bible conference a couple years ago. We had him.
The Cedar Falls Bible Conference.
The Cedar Falls Bible Conference. And invited him down, did a great job. And then Mark McConnell was there from this Federated Fellowship Church. Yep. And so Mark and the guys who put this Federated Fellowship Bible Conference together invited him.
Mark's friend of the podcast, done one before.
Yeah, he's done an episode. We've got an episode of Mark earlier, probably the first 10 episodes that we did. And so I was... When Tory was here for the Cedar Falls Bible Conference, I did a long live interview podcast with him in front of an audience where audience members could ask questions. One of the reasons for that is because his dad, Haddon Robinson, one of the greatest preachers of all time in the English spoken language, and that's verifiable. I mean, people have said that.
Yeah.
He was at the Cedar Falls Bible Conference all the time, and so we had Tory. We thought it'd be cool to do a Q&A with him, and that got recorded, and I thought it was up, but I was about ready to tell Tory just a couple days ago, hey, we're going to put this interview, which you're going to listen to right now, and we'll link it back to the first interview that you did. And then I realized the first interview is not even on our website.
Yeah.
And we just realized that guy...
That was a tech snafu there at some point.
So Dan's got that interview somewhere. We're hoping
Dan
we can track
somebody,
it down.
Yeah, somebody with... somebody on the Cedar Falls Bible Conference. If you've worked at the Cedar Falls Bible Conference in the tech booth before and you're hearing my voice right now, please search your hard drives. We would desperately love that raw file that we could finally put up, because that was a good interview.
I looked
part of that.
And we've even got a spot in our list of episodes for that interview, but it's just not in there. So for now, you're just going to hear this 30-minute or so interview. Yep. Down the road, hopefully we'll have that other one. And as soon as we do, we'll link it to this one. So just check the show notes sorry to Tory. Tory told me he might have just been nice, but he's like, I forgot that we even did that. So you don't have to apologize to me.
That sounds like him though. I mean, I think that was probably.
Yeah. Like one of the nicest guys, low key. Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of the lowest drama people that I think is,
you know, you can just tell by just listen to him talk.
Yeah, it's like even just listening to him, it's just sort of like calm, soothing, night. It's good.
Yeah. And what's cool is in his preaching, I listened to so much of his dad's preaching.
Yeah.
And he's been trained by his dad.
Yeah.
We talk about this a little bit.
Yeah.
But you're not your dad.
Right.
But there are still just some elements of Haddon Robinson. He's been so well trained, and he's such a great Tory, I'm talking about, it puts these messages together and delivers them. The use of a pause or the use of inflection, or
which I don't know if this crossed your mind when you heard that or when you're doing this, but the thing that immediately sprung to mind for me, and because Tory kind of goes through and he talks about, he sort of not defends, but he sort of, you know, he talks about like, you know, this is why I'm a little more soft spoken. This is,
yeah.
you know, this is why I don't, you know, yell from yeah. the pulpit.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talks about, you know, yeah, I think it started people, a lot of pastors would yell because they didn't have a microphone back in the day or whatever yeah. else. But it's funny to juxtapose that with our longtime preacher here, Homer Larson.
I was just thinking that
if he got on a roll for some reason and go listen, we've started putting up Homer Larson live, on as a podcast.
I just yeah. uploaded this. I think this is episode 8 of Homer Larson uh-huh. live. It's a sermon called There's Still Hope from June 24th of 1984. Homer in this sermon gets back from some trip to Europe with people from the congregation. And I'm not even sure what the text is. I don't know if he has a text, but he just unloads on the spiritual deadness of Europe.
Yeah.
And basically applies it to us. Like,
yeah.
we need to be careful that doesn't happen. Yeah. But I had just listened to this a day after yeah. interviewing Tori and talking about yelling and pastoral and different styles of yeah. preaching. And I listened to this. I mean, Homer is basically yelling the entire yeah. sermon.
Is that the one that the person who donated the tape had put a sticky note on it that said fiery?
Yeah, this one's fiery.
This one's fiery.
It yeah. was fiery.
Yeah. So yeah, so it's, you know, if you want a little, you know, little bit of both, little bit of country, a little bit of rock and roll,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, listen to Pastor Tori talk and you'll be blessed by that. And then listen to yeah. Homer Larson's talk as well. You're going to be blessed both ways.
Yeah.
Just with a different tone of voice.
Awesome. Tori, thank you for being patient with us and thanks for sitting down with me again. Mm-hmm. And folks, you're going to appreciate this. So thanks for tuning in. Okay. Hey, everybody. This is Matt Reister with the CC Podcast, and I am at the Federated Fellowship Bible Conference in Pella, Iowa. And I wasn't planning on this interview, but Tori Robinson, who some of you may recognize, who was a preacher at our Cedar Falls Bible Conference a couple years ago. Was it 2 years ago?
Yep.
So that was our 101st, I think. This is going to be our 103rd coming up.
Sounds right.
Yep. And the people at this conference got connected with Tori or were introduced to him or exposed to him at that conference. And they asked me to come do a couple podcast interviews. When I found out Tori was going to be here and I heard you preach this morning, I thought, man, I would love to sit down with you for a few more minutes. So we've just had lunch, got a little bit of break in the schedule. You're done with today's message. You got to preach tomorrow morning.
Yep.
And so thank you for being gracious to come on here and chat a little bit. I don't know exactly what order to take these in, but some of the things that came to mind, one thing I noticed in your preaching, and I just said this before we hit record, but I'm interested in your thoughts about this. Your preaching to me comes across very pastoral, versus you're not getting overly animated. You're not, you know, yelling at people. And honestly, I think there's a role for all those styles of preaching in sure. certain settings. But do you agree with my assessment that your preaching is pastoral? Or do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Well, one of the things, I'm a student of my father, and one of the things he used to teach in homiletics class was that today communication is more conversational, and maybe largely because of podcasts and mm-hmm. television and radio. And, you know, the whole idea of like yelling. I mean, you know,
when you say it that way, it sounds kind of like.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of that model for preaching came out of, you know, pre amplification where people had to yell to be heard.
Oh.
And so, you know, we have different means of communication now.
Yeah.
And so people don't get yelled at as often, you know, and
yeah.
so there is a prophetic kind of preaching that's more in your face and
yeah.
all that. I don't know that it has to necessarily be with a louder voice, although, you know, I think it's probably what you've been raised with as being
yeah.
normal. But I would say that in general, when I think of outside of the church, the kind of communication that we do, most people are much more this kind of conversation than
yeah.
having somebody talk authoritatively to them as, you know, yeah, that kind of thing.
You know, I think of those old black and white clips of Billy Graham at a crusade, mm-hmm, just giving it to him, you know, waving, yeah, his fist in the air. And
some of that is, I mean, by necessity, when you're speaking in a stadium, you have to, yeah, do it differently. When you're in a room with people, it almost, I'd say under any other circumstance other than being in church, you wouldn't do it that way.
Yeah.
And so it's a cultural thing that people have gotten accustomed to. And I think perhaps you're asking about the East Coast, perhaps serving in the East Coast for so long, such a largely unchurched area.
Yeah.
If anything, I found that a much more helpful way to talk to people.
Yeah. I was asking you before we hit record that one of the notes that I wrote down while I was listening to you preach, which is on the heels of a conversation I had with a friend of mine a guy that I just met we became friends quickly just this last week. He was describing to me his faith journey. He's from Maine and he grew up in an unchurched home, but there was this little Pentecostal church down the street that he wandered into. And that was his first exposure to the gospel. And he would say he got saved in this Pentecostal church in Maine. I was just laughing. Like, the chances of somebody getting saved in a Pentecostal church in Maine just seem really, really slim. There's a lot of mainline denominations in Maine or in the Northeast where you were at in New York. And obviously there's Baptist. You had a Baptist church. Mm-hmm. There's a Pentecostal church in Maine, at least one, because that guy wandered into it. But yeah, what is that? That's the way you kind of segued that. What's the church like? And now you've been in the Midwest for a year and a half.
Yes.
And it's not like you weren't familiar with other regions of the country and how they're different. But how is pastoring in the Northeast maybe different than it is down here in Pella, Iowa, or maybe down in Arkansas or something, Texas, in the Bible Belt? And how has that shaped the way that you preach? And you kind of alluded to that a little bit. But
well, I don't know if this really answers that, but it's very much related to this. I was telling my wife Sue the other day that we now live in Minneapolis, St. Paul area,
mm-hmm,
and I was telling her that the liberalism of Minneapolis bugs me, and even as we were talking about it, I thought that's really, really strange because it's not nearly as liberal as New York City.
Yeah,
but I went to. Huh. To Tarrytown, to New York, thinking of myself as being a missionary to that area. I mean, that was kind of literally the mentality I had.
Yeah.
And moved back to Minnesota thinking this is going to be our home.
Yeah.
And I realize that I'm not really any more at home in Minneapolis, wow, than I was there. I mean, in terms, and I think that's just part of being a Christian in a increasingly secular culture. It's not a even a political statement. The Christian way of life is not the way of our society, and I don't, unlike many Christians, I don't think that's the role of the church to Christianize our society. I think that's our role is to share the good news with them and let God change them.
Mm-hmm.
But we've settled for something else. But I didn't mean to get into
that. I love stuff. That.
But I found in the East Coast I was much more content to not really feel like what was happening in the government and in the society around me was had much to do with me. I felt like my job was to speak to them. And I guess, if anything, it taught me that that's still my job, even though I'm a retired pastor, I still am a Christian in a secular environment.
Yeah. Do you think, I didn't follow Tim Keller way closely,
mm-hmm,
but I read a couple of his books and I heard a couple of his sermons. And I would say that people were critical of Tim Keller toward the end of his life, and I don't remember exactly what that's about, but I mean, if you're a Christian leader on a platform, you're going to get some tomatoes thrown at you for something or other. But I view Tim Keller as a faithful guy who stayed faithful to the gospel as far as I know.
Yeah.
But the way his approach was certainly Northeastern. It was certainly New York.
Yeah.
I feel like it was more intellectual I think so. I think it was more toned down, kind of like what I'm noticing when I talk about your preaching being pastoral. You think that's right? And is there something about, like you kind of said earlier, about that region, those people who you need to be a different way with?
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of different cultures of churches in the Northeast, but I think you really have to decide between, are you trying to reach people who are already in the church?
Yeah.
In which case, if you do that, you probably can follow the same models of past of people that were raised in the church. But I think Keller and to some extent me, I don't think I was incredibly successful, not to any extent like he was, but to reach the culture, you can't perpetuate an old model that unbelievers and unchurched people don't relate to. I really don't think, and I think I discovered this from just feedback people gave me, that if they weren't raised in the church, you know, they didn't want to get yelled at. They preferred a more just teach people through the Bible method, and a less. There needs to be emotion in your preaching, but less of the yelling, I guess.
Yeah, or animated type. Yeah. You know, a guy from the Northeast that just came to my mind, and I was at his church a couple times, Times Square Church. Wilkerson,
yeah,
that guy was fiery.
Yeah,
I mean, he'd scream and yell, and
yeah, and I don't mean to,
and
to say that it's not effective, but it's, I think it's less effective.
Yeah, and I don't mean to suggest that there's none of it up there, because obviously I just came up with an exception, but
yeah, no, I think it'd be more typical in style in a Black Baptist church than in a White Baptist church.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I had. So, yeah, I think there are a lot of different cultural elements to what you do.
Anyway, that was one of the things that I was thinking of when I was listening to you preach this morning. Like, Tori's got a very pastoral preaching style. It's very, very effective. So I want to move to your dad. You mentioned your dad. And, I mean, at the Cedar Falls Bible Conference, he was a regular there. I would say every few years, Haddon Robinson was back. And I don't know why he was saying yes to us, because we were nobody. But I can just personally say, and you know this from the last time we got together, I mean, my love for preaching is largely because of Haddon Robinson I mean, even the spiritual impact. I was at a pretty liberal seminary for a year before I quit, before I realized it was liberal. And I don't mean politically liberal, I mean theologically liberal. And literally, I would come back to my apartment. I lived there by myself, and I would listen to a couple albums that I had that built my faith up. I went to John Piper's church in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. It was in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And I listened to Haddon Robinson tapes from the Bible Conference. And those sustained me during this really dark year where I didn't know exactly what was going on with the seminary I was at. But one of the things that's been really fun to hear you preach and to get to know you a little bit is I just see glimpses of, you're not the same person, but you have been trained by one of the best, and you carry on just kind of the legacy of one of the best. And so, like today in your message, in fact, I'm going to link it to the show notes of this podcast so people can see it and kind of maybe have a little bit better idea what we're talking about. Your use of pause, and you started out with God is good all the time. You ended it with that. I mean, this is just textbook stuff, the one point. How, I've got a lot of questions about this, but what is it like to be the son of Haddon Robinson in terms of, there's this unique burden. It's like being the son of Kobe Bryant. You know what I mean? Like, or LeBron James, Bronny now, if you're a basketball fan, everyone's thought, what's Bronny going to do? The kids got to have immense pressure. That microphone is going to fall off any second. So just kind of hold it, will you?
Okay.
Sorry about that. What's that like?
Well, it's interesting, just between you and me and everybody who's listening to the podcast. I found myself after.
Hang on 1 second.
Okay.
Gentry, my daughter, is very mechanical. Come up here and fix this clamp on this table, because it's about to fall off. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
Or just hold it there. move the chair over and just hold it, Gentry.
I can hold it. You don't have to.
She's got it. She loves this stuff. Okay. Go ahead, though. Keep it by your...
Okay. When I finished preaching today, I was not actually very pleased with what I did. And it wasn't... And actually, prior to getting up to preach, we had a prayer meeting, and I prayed before the group. I said, you know, I really want to impress people. I know that's not what I'm supposed to do, but that's what I want to do. So, Lord, help me to be effective. But even though I didn't want to impress people, I felt like I could have impressed them better. So it was frustrating on one level, and I kind of had to just say, okay, God, you do with that as you see fit. Because I have these incredibly high standards because of my dad.
Yeah.
And the good news with that is I just... one of the pastors who was here was saying that my dad had spoke. Oh, it was Tim who was one of the speakers.
Oh, here. This is great. Last night,
yeah.
Tell this is great.
So my dad was speaking at a conference at a church that he goes to, and in front of his pastor, a woman who goes to the church said to her pastor, "That was one of the speaking of the sermon my dad preached. That's one of the best sermons I ever heard." And, you know, how a pastor takes that when you've been preaching week after week, year after year, and the guest speaker was the best. But my dad was that kind of a preacher that, you know, you can have a very capable preacher doing a faithful job.
Yeah.
And yet my dad was just exceptionally gifted. So I've got that standard in my head, and it's hard to be satisfied. But as you noted, I have also learned God didn't call me to be Haddon Robinson.
Right.
So I try to live with those expectations.
Thinking about noticing you as more of a pastoral preacher, and you've kind of fleshed that out a little bit, your understanding of that, how are you similar and how are you different from your dad preaching-wise, would you say?
Well, my dad would have abdicated, he did in his classes, conversational preaching. That's what I would probably call pastoral preaching.
Yeah, yeah.
but the fact is, some people are just by nature are just much more energetic, and that you got to be who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are going to be people who are conversational, just like in conversation. You're an energetic conversationalist, and I'm kind of a less energetic conversationalist. But I think that in a conversation like this, that can work well.
Yeah.
I think it's easier to listen to somebody who's really animated. So I wouldn't necessarily discourage energetic.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think there's a lot to be gained by yelling at people.
But, yeah. But
using energy, that's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just kind of changing gears from your dad. You've been out of pastoring now for a year and a half, something like that. What do you miss about it?
Well, it's been a real adjustment to go from being, and it's not really that I miss it, but it's just a huge adjustment. I'm going to a church of over 1,000 people, and so I am just a face in the crowd. Mm. And so I've gone from being the person who's kind of at the center of everything to being hardly on the periphery.
Mm-hmm.
I really, most of the time, don't really mind that. In fact, I think the longer it's been, I really think the pastor of the church I'm at, he's a good Bible teacher, and I learn from him. I enjoy hearing him. That's why we chose that church.
Mm-hmm.
So that has drawn me, but it's just an adjustment to come up with what a new ministry looks like. It's serving to be of help to this pastoral staff and just to disciple people in that church. That's what I see as my...
You're teaching a class this summer, or you've been teaching a class. Tell us about that.
I think it's a great idea. They have what they call Renovation U, our church's renovation church. And Renovation U is kind of like a mini seminary course setup. They have a Old Testament survey, New Testament survey, how to read the Bible, theology. So all these classes are taught, and you take like one, you have to take them in a certain sequence they suggest. So it's a way of discipleship, at least, you know, from a biblical knowledge standpoint, to give people the tools that they need.
So how to read your Bible?
That's the one I'm going to be teaching.
And so are you going to get into like genres and read this genre this way, read this genre that way?
Right. Right. Yeah. And at the core is trying to find out what is the main idea that Paul or whoever the writer is, mm-hmm. is trying to communicate. And so that's always, at least in my opinion, the book of the Bible was written to communicate something. So
yeah.
How do we find that out?
That's great. You talked about rejoicing in suffering today. If you want to set that up at all, but my kind of upshot question for you is, can you like specifically tell us one or two ways that you've suffered? You know, what you said today was that you want to personalize that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we believe that God is a God who is with us in suffering. I can't remember exactly how you said it, but generally you can say, yeah, I agree with that. But do you believe that individually? And so if you want to flesh that out any more than I have, go ahead. But like I said, how have you had to apply that in your own life?
Well, compared to people who get thrown in jail for their faith or martyred for their faith or lose a job, I've suffered very little. And I mentioned in the sermon that at least in Romans 5, that word for suffering is really more almost like persecution suffering. We all face trials and tribulations, and there are plenty of scriptures that talk about just the benefit of trial. So I think there's a real overlap in the passages. But you know, one of the hardest periods in my life was, I was a couple years into a pastorate in New Jersey. I was essentially forced out of the church. That they didn't force me out, but I knew that what they wanted wasn't going to work for me. And that was so disillusioning to me. First of all, that I was treated the way I was by a few people in the church, not by the whole church. I didn't expect that. It was certainly one of the hardest things I experienced in ministry, but I look back on that and I can really relate to what I was communicating in my message, that I wouldn't want to go through that again. I hated it, but I look back on it and I thank God that I went through it, because one, and I had this prideful attitude that only incompetent people go through that kind of thing in ministry. One of the things I learned from it is about one in every four pastors is forced out of his church.
Wow.
So there's a lot of that that goes on.
Yep.
And even for those that aren't forced out, there are plenty of things that happen within churches that are very painful.
Mm-hmm.
So it made me much more empathetic for other pastors. It certainly was a time of growth, just because I was so desperate for God's help and support and all that. So, you know, I can look back on that. It was a period of about a year between being criticized and corrected by the church leaders. You know, they didn't like the way I preached. They were trying to change the way I preached. And I'm not still to this day, I'm not 100% sure, but I think what had happened was, it was a church that had grown a great deal under the previous pastor. And I think a bunch of people came from a lot of different churches. And so when they would hear me preach, they each had a different standard to say, this is good preaching.
Mm.
And while they all weren't happy with my preaching, they weren't all unhappy about the same thing. And I came to the conclusion, that, I mean, there were things I'm sure I could do better, but I came to the conclusion that they were not all unhappy with, there wasn't one person who could satisfy all those criticisms. And I think, unfortunately, that church after we left really became kind of fractured, which doesn't please me at all, but it kind of seems to confirm that sort of thing. But all that's to say that it was one of the most painful experiences in my life, And yet, I think as I look back in my life, it was one of the most productive periods of my life. And that's what I think God does in suffering.
Yeah, that's great. You said something at the beginning of your message today about being a retired pastor. You're used to preach. Did you preach every Sunday? Probably, right?
Sure, yeah.
And so you're used to cranking this stuff out. And so, like, you know, your normal rhythm was probably the Lord kind of shows you something in Scripture or gives you some insights. Now I get to preach on Sunday, and so I'll get that out of my system a little bit. And now you have far more limited opportunities to do that. What do you do with that?
Well, it made this opportunity a fun one, an interesting one, because the way I would normally, probably 80% of my preaching was preaching through a book of the Bible, because I felt like that way I could stick with God's themes and not come up with my own. I think there's a place, definitely a place as a pastor to say, what do my people need to hear? But even with that, I would try to address it from, you know, what book of the Bible speaks to those things. But it was interesting with this assignment. The assignment was to be biblical, but
that's good.
Well, I mean, there's a danger, a challenge, not a danger, a challenge to being topical and being expository.
Yes,
it's possible to do both.
Yep.
But
I noticed that today. It's interesting that you bring that up. Keep talking.
Well, because the topic I was assigned was to talk about a doctrine of God and a doctrine of man. And so the way I went about it was I kind of thought back of series that I'd taught through what would work for that.
Yeah.
That's how I came up with the passage I preached on. It was to comply with that. I hadn't preached that particular message, but I'd preached on that passage.
Yeah. Have you thought about now, a year and a half out, have you thought about other ways? I mean, you're teaching this class, but have you ever thought about other ways to kind of offload the stuff for others that the Lord had previously been leading you to offload weekly, if that makes sense? Well, have you thought about writing a book or doing a podcast or any preaching, supply preaching more often or anything like that?
Yeah, all those are possibilities. I have thought about, I actually had started a book that had to do with my dad. I kind of started it when he was well, and then he quickly went downhill with Parkinson's. And it's hard to get some of the information because he's not around to get it from. But, you know, it's funny, he never really wanted to have a biography written. His comment to me, he said, if you have a biography written, a good biography has to have some smut in it. It's got to be some tension, some, you know, dig up some of the dirt in somebody's life. And he said, I don't need to do any of that. So he was always reluctant to do it. But what I did do back a number of years ago, I preached about, I think it was four sermons on lessons my dad taught me.
Oh, wow.
And they were semi-biographical. You know, I'd tell a story that happened in his life and what I learned or what he learned, just using that. So
yeah.
I thought maybe, you know, I should see if I can come up with a few more. I don't have enough for a book, but I have four chapters.
Yeah.
So I got to think about that.
So going back to you and your dad and, you know, the Kobe or the LeBron and Bronny, you know, type thing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe, I don't know if you want to be totally candid about this or not, but do you embrace that? Are you 100%? I am so glad I'm Haddon Robinson's son. Obviously you are, but I mean, and there's no dark side to that at all. Or is there kind of but these people expect me to be Haddon Robinson when they invite me to a conference or when they, and there's this like insecurity of like a letdown or something. I'm not a psychologist, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And the reason I'm asking this in reference to what you just said is I would be the first person to buy that book. but I also feel like, I don't know if I should say that to you because it sounds like it could be interpreted by you as the reason I'm into Tori is really because of his dad. Well, how do you manage that? And
well, I think just in honesty, he's on a human level, and I don't know that this even matters before God. I don't think it does, but on a human level, he's definitely the brighter light between he and I, and that's not a put down on me, but his life has impacted far more people than mine, and
does that bother you?
No, I think it's, you know, that, I think I judge, you know, what I've done with my life in comparison, and that bothers me a little bit. I mean, I think he was a better steward with his life maybe than I've been
okay.
with mine. I don't think I've been terrible, but, you know.
But don't you think some of it is just sovereignly determined by God? Like,
oh, sure.
If you'd have been given the opportunities and made the connections that hadn't it, heck, if I did, maybe we'd have been that.
Yeah.
And so God decided that. And who's to say to the potter, why did you make me for this purpose instead of this purpose?
That's a great, great reminder. I do believe that. And I'm one of my dad's biggest fans. So that's what makes me interested in the book is I think that there are things that he has contributed that I'd love to try to continue. Like for example, Baker Book, and he wrote Baker Books is republishing his book on preaching, and I was happy to endorse that and get at one of his colleagues who taught at Denver Seminary to help with the editing of that to bring it up to, you know, the changes that need to be made are changes of dad. The last time there was an addition, it was done when people used CD-ROMs and things like that.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of little, you know, technical things.
You got to update that stuff.
Yeah. And without that, it just doesn't read well to a new
audience.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
So I was really happy.
The biblical preaching book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was really happy to see that get used again. And I guess when I think about things I could do in addition to preaching that I would like to do, it would be to try to look through my dad's notes and sermons and things to see if there's something there that could be published or used in some other way.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I told you we'd only take 30 minutes and we're at 30 minutes. So always a pleasure. I'm glad our paths cross. I hope it will continue to cross. Just an update at the Cedar Falls Bible Conference. I mean, we're trying to build this thing into year-round ministry. Mm-hmm. It's previously been like an 8-day conference. And so we plan on having retreats and seminars and conferences and concerts throughout the year. A little bit. Have you ever been out to the Billy Graham Training Center at the Cove in Asheville?
I'm familiar with it, but I've never been there.
But they've got stuff going on all year long. Yeah. Now, they've got a name, Billy Graham, that helps their ministry have a higher profile. But we think we can do that in a regional way. And I would really love to see you come down and be part, especially since you're close now to Cedar mm-hmm. Falls. You still got a lot to offer, and I hope that the Lord continues to use you to do that. And I hope our paths continue to cross. So thanks, Lord. I appreciate it.
The CC Podcast Conversations is part of Christian Crusaders Radio and Internet Ministry, started in 1936 and is one of America's longest running radio ministries. We are 100% donor funded, and donations to our ministry are tax deductible. So if you are encouraged, challenged, or inspired by today's conversation, please consider making a donation on our website, ChristianCrusaders.org, or mail a check to Christian Crusaders, 7401 University Avenue, Cedar Falls, Iowa, 50613. In addition to our other podcasts, which I mentioned at the front of this episode, I want to mention two of our other ministry partners worth checking out. First, the Cedar Falls Bible Conference, equipping believers with the truth of God's Word since 1922. Visit CedarFallsBibleConference.com for free access to previous conference content or for more information about upcoming events. Second is Power to Change Digital Strategies, an online ministry partnering volunteer Christian mentors with people around the world searching the internet for answers. If you or someone you know could benefit from an anonymous online conversation with a caring Christian adult, go to issuesiface.com. Or if you would like to be a volunteer Christian mentor, please visit p2cdigital.com. That's the letter P, the number 2, and the letter C, digital.com. See our episode notes for details and links, and remember to subscribe, leave a 5-star rating, and write a review. God's richest blessings to you, and thanks again for listening.